The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with SuperValue Travel Insurance. Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance online at supervalue.ie.
Now, the recent death of Bobby Christina Brown, the daughter of singers Whitney Houston and Bobby Brown, drew stark attention to how a parent's drug addiction can often adversely affect a child. Polly Yates and her daughter Peaches Geldof were another sad example. It's an area that the Tiglin Rehab Centre in Wicklow deal with firsthand on a daily basis. And I'm joined now by Tiglin CEO Phil Thompson and by Paul, who's been through Tiglin's programme. Paul, I'm going to start with you. Like, you are in some ways, many, like a kind of a classic example of how parents' addiction can negatively impact on your children. This is what you've known in life, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Yeah, I grew up in addiction.
And, like, when did you start taking drugs and drinking?
I suppose I would have been maybe 10 or 11. And, I seen my parents drinking constantly, partying. You know, me brother's friends be smoking, cannabis and stuff in the house. And so, you know, it was the thing to do, so I started doing it.
And when you say 10 or 11, what were you taking? Was it smoking dope and was it drinking?
It would have been taking LSD, smoking hash, drinking, so on.
But, like, even before you became addicted, and there was a time when you could say, right, like, you're definitely addicted, and that you were in trouble with the law, weren't you?
I was, yeah.
And you in what way? Like, what were you doing? Robbing cars or...?
I was out robbing constantly for money. I wasn't into rob cars. I was constantly out robbing, just anything I could get my hands on, those sort of thing, you know.
And were you robbing because you wanted to rob, or were you robbing because your parents sent you out to rob?
Well, I was robbing because we had nothing in the house, and it was sort of encouraged by my parents, you know. So that's why I done it, you know.
So you were doing it for the family, if you like. You were doing it to bring something home.
It was sort of.
All right, now you had a 4-year sentence by the time you were 15. Where were you for those four years?
I was in Overstown campus. It's Trinity House, a young institution. It's a detention centre for, youths down in Lusk, County Dublin.
And when you were in Overstown, did you learn anything? Was it any good? Or did you find out other people who were bad, and when you went out, you met them again? Or what way did it impact on you in the end?
It was a good impact in a way that, you know, I went down. I never went to school. I had to go to a school where it was for hyperactive kids, where no other school would take me. So yeah. I had to go into it in Sheriff Street. And when I went down to Trinity House, you know, they showed me a lot of love down there. You know, the staff, they're not prison officers down there, you know. Poorly to my junior cert down there, I got 6 honours out of 6 subjects. You know, it had a really good effect on me in a way. Well, not really, obviously, major, because as soon as I left there, I went straight back into crime. But right. They showed me a thing of love that nobody had showed me before and took an interest in me future and stuff, you know.
Okay, but by the same token, at the age of 14, you made a discovery that no 14-year-old should ever have to make. Tell us about that.
I found my brother dead in the sitting room in the family home.
And were you sitting beside him at the time and didn't know?
I got out of bed and I went down the stairs, and I thought he was asleep on the armchair, so I was watching the telly for about maybe 30 minutes, and I got up, I was going back to bed, and I says, you know, he's there asleep, so I'll throw a blanket over him. I went down and I sussed that he wasn't asleep, he was dead, you know.
And how did he die? Like,
choked on his vomit on drugs.
So drugs and drink he had been taking at that time?
Valium and right. Alcohol, yeah.
So, like, I mean, it must have been just, like, mad for you, completely traumatic. So how did it affect you, drink and drugs consumption and all that?
Well, I ended up a heroin addict for 17 years. I was constantly in and out of prison. I was selling drugs, I was on drugs. I was a 15-year-old junkie who used to sit in my ma's bedroom smoking heroin while my ma was watching the telly, you know.
But hold on a second, wasn't there something about you doing a fast course at some stage as well in the middle of all this?
If the fast course thing was conditions of getting out of detention, you know. So either we have fast course, but while I was doing the fast course, you're talking like I'd miss a lot of days, and I'd do it from, I think it was 9 in the morning till 4. So then, you know, after that I was out and I was, you know, getting up to all sorts, you know.
Getting up to all sorts and then being caught and being sentenced for it too. There was a 10 or 11 months, they did 6 months, followed by 2 years, 8 months, back in St. Patrick's as well, then back to St. Patrick's again, then Mountjoy. Was it just normal for you to be out doing things that you shouldn't have been doing or whatever, and then be in?
Yeah, well, as I said, it was encouraged. You know what I mean? Nobody, you know, none of the family, like, you know, obviously the guards, the solicitors, and the prosecution and stuff, you know, being caught, they tell me it was wrong to do what I was doing, but my parents told me it wasn't. You know what I mean? So who were they to tell me? I mean, it'd be like me coming to you as a young flat and telling you, don't mind your man and dad, don't go to school, go out. You'd think I was crazy, like, because your man and dad, what they tell you is what, you know, do you know what I mean?
But yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Does that mean, therefore, that, like, in many ways, you're safer in jail?
Well, I would have been safe in jail up to an extent, yeah, where I would have been away from risk of ODing and, you know.
But if there was no father figure really in life, was there any kind of a father figure in jail?
Just the lads who looked up, the friends of mine. You know?
And what was there, were there TVs, were there radios, were there books you could look at or whatever?
When I started going into prison, there was no tellies, no, there was books and a radio. And you had a book and the library and stuff. You go to school, do the gym. But you're only out your cell 6 hours a day anyway.
Okay, well, look, Phil is sitting beside you. Phil Thompson is the CEO of Tiglan. And just before I ask, is Paul's story a typical one? I want to just get to the good bit of your story. Like, you did get out of Mountjoy. What happened then after that? At the age of 21 or so.
I met my girlfriend, and I was put on a probation course by a probation officer, and he took an interest in me life and, you know, me future. Yeah. And he got me a job, helped me get a job and stuff. So I met my girlfriend, she got pregnant, we had the young one and stuff. But I lost, the company closed down, so I lost my job and I drifted back into addiction again.
And did that include robbing and selling drugs as well?
Included everything. Everything.
Right, and you were back in and out of Mountjoy, I presume?
Twice after that, yeah. Three times, I think, yeah. Only on small sentences.
Okay, well then, Phil is here, as I say. And again, Phil, sorry, I'm not going to go to his tricks. One last one then. What changed for you then, Paul?
What changed for me?
Like, Sean McDermott, you have an addiction counsellor, your HSE, etc. Did he tell you about Tiglan?
He did, yeah. I went to him desperate, and, you know, and I said, look, I need to go to treatment. And he says, where do you want to go? I said, you know, you're the addiction counsellor, you tell me, where do I need to go? He said, I've just a place that'll suit you down to the ground.
Just the place that'll suit you down to the ground, because I've never seen anything as bad as you. Is that it? He really thought you weren't great at all. Your whole life
I was an absolute disaster. Yeah. I was very, very chaotic, and I had a real didn't care about anything attitude. I had no fear. I was, you know, I just really didn't care. I'd lost all hope in life, you know. I really had.
All right, well then, we're talking about Tiglan Rehab Centre in Wicklow, and that's where you come in now, Phil, finally, because I wanted to say that with Paul's story in terms of the middle, beginning, end and all the rest of it, and the fact that he's got through to something, you're the CEO. Is Paul's story typical of someone growing up whose parents had addiction problems?
Yeah, I suppose in so many ways it is. I think one thing is there's probably not a typical outcome because every person is uniquely different. But you can certainly see that in the mix of all of the chaos and the lack of positive leadership, you know, it is a typical outcome for somebody in that environment.
All right, but it's not all doom and gloom. Like a good percentage of people who grow up in addiction affected families don't enter addiction themselves.
Yeah, the research would say that, you know, about 75% of people who grow up in that environment don't actually go into hardcore addiction like that. I suppose with Tiglan, we've been successfully seeing people exit addiction and for since 2008, and I suppose in that we probably get a large percentage of people that will come in from families where addiction seems to be a prevalent
But there would
issue.
Be a huge percentage there who are mothers, and therefore could I say there's another generation at risk?
Yeah, without a doubt. Like, we have a men's program and a women's program, and I suppose there's a high percentage, probably about 80-85% of our women on the program would be mothers. So, you know, each one of those represents a family that's left behind because of addiction. And I think that's the interesting thing, is that you see people who come into a program like Tiglan, and behind them is a child that's left at home, perhaps with a family member, or maybe have had to be handed into
care. All right,
care.
Well then, let's just say that maybe of those who go to Tiglan, would it be fair to say that about 50% maybe had parents with addiction?
I would say
more.
Yeah,
I'd say
about
more than that.
Probably 50-60%. Yeah, of people. Who come
and is there a difference between how mums and dads deal with addiction and treatment?
Yeah, I think it's kind of different because there's the parental instincts between a mother and a father seem to be quite different. It's it seems to be that it's a lot harder for the women to come into a residential program because of their instinct towards their children. I don't know what it is, but men don't have the same attachment to leaving behind a child. Maybe there's people there that can pick up the pieces for them, that mothers don't have those opportunities. But we certainly see that it's a bigger issue for
all right, well,
for
look,
women.
A programme then, a kind of a 12-step programme, in this case a 5-step programme. So there's 5 different survival roles that kids fall into, which kind of dictate whether they're likely to become addicts themselves. Which, you know, which one is most likely to become an addict?
I suppose there's probably not one that's more likely to become an addict. You know, in some ways, you know, you could look at the scapegoat role, which is quite often it's probably more well known. It's a word that we would use. That person, you know, that typical child is kind of the child who is the troublesome one, gets into trouble at a young age, and for so many reasons, the family can look at their problem and not actually look at the parent that's in addiction. And you know, so they look at the chaos that's caused by that sibling, and avoid looking at the parent in addiction, because there seems to be a stigma attached to that. But because that child has gone down that road at an early age, their identity gets caught up in being.
And what about
person.
The others, like the enabler? Is that the person who's usually closest to the addicted person?
Yeah, it seems to be closest. It's kind of one of those things. They cover up the mistakes, they make the excuses, and it's a very unhealthy kind of support for the person in addiction. That person in addiction can avoid the consequences then, you know.
Okay, I presume, Paul, from your point of view, that you recognise and understand all of this. When you did arrive in Tighlin, how did it go? I mean, the treatment, was it good?
It was very, very hard. Yeah, very, very hard. Because when I went in, they told me, like, maybe 90% of the way I went on, spoke to people, and my attitude, body language and stuff wasn't great, that I had to change it all, you know? You know, and challenged me behaviour big time down there.
Yeah, but in one word, has it worked for you? I get the impression the answer is very much a yes.
Yeah, big time, yeah. Yeah, it really has.
Because you volunteer in Tighlin, you're the team leader for Tighlin's No Books Cafe, an outreach bus for the homeless, travels around Dublin and Wicklow weekday nights, volunteers, provides food and hot drinks and clothes for the homeless. Mm. So you're working there. This is a gig, this is a job, and this is realising I was there. I'm one of the best people to be doing this job because I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, because I know the benefit of the results of getting clean off heroin and going through the programme, you know.
Well, then I have to ask, Phil, is Paul's treatment and success, is it typical?
It's definitely typical for somebody who will complete the programme and commit to the level that Paul has. You know, we see many, many people come through. The great thing is having Paul with us. He'll see that, you know, people coming through No Books Cafe into the programme from the chaos of homelessness, addiction, prison life, that they have just as much an opportunity as he has had. And we've had many, many people do that.
Right, OK. Well, listen, look, thanks a million for dropping in, Phil Thompson, and congratulations, the CEO of Tighlin, and Paul, as a Tighlin graduate and doing so much, congratulations to you even more so. May the road rise with you.
Thanks.
Thank you very much indeed for dropping into us on the programme.